Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is gaming attorney Bob Nersessian. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
As always, pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. In some airports, including McCarran.
Oh, we're going to jump right in, huh?
Yeah. We are.
I thought we were going to plug my show.
I love Richard's show. What show?
So there is one weekend left of Noises Off out at Super Summer Theater. So it's a very funny comedy. So this show is dropping on Thursday. There are shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
I made my stage debut Friday.
You did? Where?
Yes. I was a guest speller on the Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Oh, in Las Vegas Little Theater.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's funny. I didn't know they did that. They bring people up from the audience?
They sort of have it set up ahead of time. But I did a little bit of ad lib, got my own laugh.
All right.
Posted on Facebook that Tommy Tune better watch out.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's great.
I have seen The Noises Off by that Richard's in. He plays a lovable drunk burglar. It's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it immensely. Bonnie slept through it. So if you've ever been in theater or something similar to theater, you will recognize all the people there, as happened in every show. If you've never had any exposure to acting in a theater or that, it might not be quite as funny. I'm not sure. But I thought it was hilarious.
Well, for me, I mean, the reason I wanted to do the show in the first place is over the last 30 years, this is the funniest show that I've ever seen. So when the chance came to audition to get into it, I, you know, jumped at it. And I think the show is just hilarious. So. But I guess I'm biased now.
Well, you have the best part, too.
Well.
Other than the girl who goes around with almost no clothes on, that might not. But that's better.
That was my second choice.
That was your second choice.
That's the difference between me going to see it and not going to see it. I don't want Richard half naked on a stage.
No, I'm not.
No, but he's charming. He is lovable in that part. It's just great. All right. As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, in some airports, including McCarran in Las Vegas, they have an apparently voluntary facial recognition system set up where they purportedly compare your picture to that on the passport. Presumably, once data is collected, it's a short step to providing that to all interested law enforcement agencies. For those listeners interested in keeping their identity a secret from casinos, do you see any risk in voluntarily agreeing to go through this process?
I guess the way you phrase it, Richard, or no, I'm sorry,
Bob. I'm Bob.
I know you're Bob. The way you phrase that, Bob, I don't understand why they would. How much of a burden is it to avoid that process? But at the same time, I think you're probably pretty safe that, God, I hate to give the federal government any kind of credence, especially after Snowden and NSA, but I don't see them allowing this database out. Doesn't mean it won't get hacked, but it isn't going to get hacked by casinos. It's going to get hacked by...
They wouldn't voluntarily give it to other law enforcement agencies and consider casinos a law enforcement for surveillance reasons. I mean, they have money laundering, which is a form of law enforcement.
I'm for staying out of all of this kind of stuff. If you're just, you know, thoughts are...
If you have a chance to stay out of it, do, just on general principles.
On general principles. I'm not even getting fingerprinted for my church and giving up volunteering because I don't want to give up my fingerprints.
All right.
I'm just... Church is angry.
So wait, the church wants to fingerprint you?
The church has... And this is the local... The local diocese of the Catholic Church, the bishop has issued a ruling that anybody who wants to volunteer for anything has to be fingerprinted and they do some other checks too.
Wow.
And I've been with that church for 27 years. All of a sudden, I'm somebody you got to look out for. So I don't think it's heresy to go after your bishop, but I do think this is pretty ridiculous.
Now, as I'm assuming that as a officer of the court, your fingerprints are on file.
From back when I graduated law school, and they also fingerprinted me, and I did do it when I was a judge, although I skirted the second time and they never noticed.
Uh-huh.
I remember I took the test to be a substitute teacher in California back 20 years ago or something, and they have to fingerprint you if you're going to, you know, teach. So, yeah.
Yeah, that summa cum laude from UCLA doesn't give you the credentials. The fact that you have a thumbprint with ridges does. What the hell?
Well, but I guess they want to check to make sure that you have no, like, pedophile crimes or something like that if you're going to be teaching, elementary school.
Okay, granted, but they've gotten overly cavalier with this. Yes, I was a judge. You get my fingerprints. Yes, I'm going to work as a Eucharistic minister on Sunday. Certainly I understand why you need my fingerprints.
All right, moving on. Bob, do you practice only in Nevada, or are you available for cases in other states as well?
Well, that's a mixed question from your preliminary one. The answer is I am only licensed in Nevada, although I am an emeritus attorney in Michigan, which is...
Aren't you too young to be an emeritus?
You'd be surprised how old I am now. But that as an aside, that's the term of art they picked for those of us who are not going to voluntarily give them dues any longer. Because we don't do anything there. So instead of just saying you can't be an attorney, they make you an emeritus attorney. And so I'm still in the book and my old friends can contact me, but I don't have any practice privileges in Michigan. And then to the second half of your question, I've worked in Iowa, California, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Mississippi. So yeah, I get around.
Arizona, I think.
Connecticut and Arizona, yes. Wow, I'm an international gallivant.
Well, Arizona doesn't make you international.
Well, it's an Indian reservation.
Yes.
So it's a sovereign nation.
In Arizona, I actually appeared at the Tonto Apache Tribal Court, so I am international. Thank you. And certainly national, but as I was telling your... The point is, if you're going to get me in, I've said this before, I'm very expensive, okay? If you want me to practice at a place where I got to get on an airplane, I will be prohibitively expensive. Yet, people hire me, so I'm not going to say they're folly. I think they still get the best attorney out there. But I am available, and I will practice in the foreign courts, foreign being different states, on what is called a pro hoc vici admission, so I would ordinarily have to have local counsel as well.
And they'll be expensive.
No, I usually, I don't want to say too much because I've got local counsel out there right now and I don't want them to know how cheap they are.
You can't handle all the cases that come your way. Are there other people now that have taken up this type of, that will handle this type of case that you recommend to people if you're not available?
Some of the local counsel I dealt with are now foraying into this, and they are enjoying it very much. This whole false imprisonment, casinos, there's a lot sexy about it. There's a lot interesting about it, and other attorneys are starting to discover it.
Are there any in Las Vegas that take your overflow?
Oh, yeah. Boy, if I give out their names here, they're already thanking me, but nobody's sending me checks. Let's see. Mark Seguiz has taken some cases.
Suppose we shouldn't ask for his phone number, huh?
Yeah.
I'm
just saying, I'm not asking you to recommend people. I'm just saying if they come to you and you can't take the case for whatever reason.
I usually give three names out and say, check out these guys. And then I always point out, if I'm turning away a case, I say, different lawyers. I will invariably say this because as soon as I talk to somebody, there is a potential, no matter how much they misunderstand, there is a potential for them to misunderstand the pre-attorney relationship and say, well, I listened to you and you told me this and therefore I relied on it. And next thing you know, I get a malpractice suit against me and I don't even remember who the person was because it was a 4-minute phone call. So I will invariably end every phone call where I did not actually enter into a written retainer agreement with a statement that there are other attorneys out there. Different attorneys have different opinions. You don't count necessarily on mine. Shop around, search around, get a second opinion. I hope that covers my ass, but I don't know what else you can do other than that as you deal with the public in general.
Okay. Different subject. Say a tribal court decides that what somebody does in the casino or on their land was a misdemeanor or felony. It could be several different things. Can they put you in Indian jail?
There are very few things they can put you in Indian jail for. Usually you're only in Indian jail until non-Indian jailers show up to take you to real jail.
Okay.
And on the misdemeanors and things like that, their power of arrest and prosecution is limited to, and I want to make sure I get this right, because this blew my mind. If I'm right, and don't count on this, it is certainly limited to Indians, but it may not be limited to members of the tribe where the police are acting. For example, if you're a member of the Coushatta tribe and you're in Michigan on a Chippewa casino, now while each of those are different sovereign nations, I think I saw a case that says that the Chippewa tribal police are allowed to arrest and prosecute a Mississippi, these are the examples, not the actual one, but would have jurisdiction over somebody who's a member of the Coushatta tribe.
Wow.
But not
me or you.
Because
unless you're a secret.
A secret
Indian.
Sioux?
A secret good one. All right.
Okay. Now, being in the Indian jail won't affect your regular criminal record, but when they put you in a regular jail, it will. Maybe.
Yeah. An Indian jail might carry through on NCIC as an arrest. But you know, people worry about all of this stuff way too much. You got another question coming later, and I'll address it right now. I see all the time gamblers worried about CTRs.
Uh-huh.
And currency, SARs.
Currency, okay? Transaction reports and suspicious activity reports.
Yes. And right now, I think it's mostly electronic, but there are still paper ones, and historically they were paper. And as near as I can tell, in a little town called Novi, Michigan, there's a building that is 400 feet long and 140 feet wide that has 1,200,000,000 sheets of paper in it that are titled SAR and CTR at the top. Those aren't looked at for anything. This is an opinion. They are only looked at if you get in other trouble, and then they have a methodology where they can pull those up and bring it forward. But triggering an SAR or triggering a CTR, ordinarily, as I understand it, stands less chance than a snowball in hell of triggering an investigation of any type.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You're saying that like you might disagree, Bob.
No, I don't disagree. I'm just wondering which question to ask you next. I have choices here. And I'm reading it. These are all transcribed from our listeners. And It's like the next one starts out of, well, next time BN is on GWAE. Well, I probably don't need to read that. So I'm just trying to siphon through what part I need to read. Okay. Someone would like to know, if you were writing a gambling reform ballot initiative, what would you ask for? What needs to be updated and what needs to be changed, etc.?
The thing I would push for the most is that the legislature rewrite the trespass laws to overrule the Nevada Supreme Court's erroneous decision in Slade, which says there is a statute that says casinos are in essence public amusements and have to remain open to everyone. Okay? And the Nevada Supreme Court said, no, NRS 207.200, which is the trespass statute, takes precedence over that, and they can throw anyone out at any time for any or no reason. And it is just brutal, not only for gamblers, but for regular people. These casinos are using the law to bar people. For goodness sakes, I know of riggers that got caught up being the ploppy at the table where the team got thrown off and they 86'd everyone. And all of a sudden you take a company like MGM or Caesars with 30 outlets, and here's a guy who is setting up stages for a living. And he just got trespassed from work. He got fired by that casino because he was sitting at a blackjack table. Wow. And he has no recourse. And the casinos, when you go to them, they don't care. I'm going to give you the worst example right now. And it's a client. My client is at a strip casino. He has done nothing. He and a dealer are talking about their mutual hobby. Not a dealer, I'm sorry, a pit person. Are talking about their mutual hobby, which is guns. They're just talking about guns. Guns are legal. Hell, they're even protected under the Second Amendment. A dealer at the next table hears them talking about guns. He goes, this guy says he has a gun. He never said he had a gun. Next thing you know, five security attack this guy at the blackjack table, tackle him, run him into the back room. They have searched him. There's no gun. The pit boss, the dealer, everybody has confirmed he wasn't creating a ruckus. He wasn't making a threat. He's not doing anything. Now, the casino has taken him into custody. What would you expect that casino to do once they find out that this guy did nothing? I would expect them to say, Mr. Smith, we are so sorry. Things are tense in this town. We had a big shooting not too long ago. We overreacted. We want to extend our most heartfelt apologies, give you a nice comp, ask you to please not sue us.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the response that any reasonable person would expect?
Yep.
Here's what the casino did. The casino looked him in the eye and said, you are no longer welcome at our casino. We are trespassing you. And if you come back in here again, we're going to arrest you. And he's looking at him going, what did I do? And they're going, get the hell out of here. What a brutal system. What a terrible advertisement for the welcomeness of Las Vegas. And yet, that's what the decision in Slade allows this casino to do. I think there should be a law out there that says if you frankly fuck up that bad, you better be apologizing or we're going to take your license away as an unsuitable practice because you're not nice to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, got me on my horse again, didn't you?
Yeah, we still haven't hit the roof yet, but the show is early, so we're working on it. Yeah.
But can you believe that? They literally, I mean, instead of apologizing, and they knew they were wrong. They absolutely knew it. And they said, they double down and hurt the guy more. This is the casino. Maybe people will figure it out here. Well, good. They deserve it. This is the casino closest to Turnberry. He's got a place at Turnberry. He can't go to his hangout anymore because they threw him out of it. And they threw him out of it because they made a mistake.
It's mind-boggling the way they run these places.
Except you see it over and over and over again. And then the casinos show up in court and they go, well, we're allowed to throw him out for any or no reason. And if our reason is because we were embarrassed by our own mistake, that's a good enough reason to bar him from a public amusement in the state of Nevada.
And the judges agree with that argument?
Yes. In fact, they handed it down as gospel.
Because this is Slade ruling.
Yes.
So to get Slade overturned, do you either need to rewrite the laws or
at this find point, a at test this camp? Point, a legislator who understands what you need to have a welcoming tourist destination has to rewrite those laws to say that casinos cannot be unreasonable towards the people who, frankly, are paving our roads and sending our kids to school. But apparently, some people have just too much power and too much arrogance and have been entrenched for too long of a period of time to be normal and civil, and in the meantime, act as though they are the arrogant overseers of everybody in this valley.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to a non-Slade discussion.
I got that look from you like, God, Bob, why do you always over-exaggerate?
No, that's not what the look meant. I have nothing to say to that. I don't, I wish that didn't exist, and I don't know what to say about it.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, well, but I don't find it surprising at all. I mean, just it just seems like nothing they can do can surprise me anymore because it just it just gets so more comical, you know. It's just kind of mind-boggling.
Okay. A player was playing an East Coast casino on a progressive slot machine that was a must hit by 5,000. It was currently at $4,950. The machine malfunctions and stops going. They needed to get a technician to come and reboot it. When the technician reboots it, the progressive is at 4,000, which is...
It's normal start point.
It's normal start point, which is unplayable for players who know what they're doing. The only reason he was playing it at 4,950 is because he had the advantage when it's that close to 5,000.
Well, but that part isn't really relevant. I mean...
But then no, it goes I get to, it. And then here's, it goes
to, so okay. He lost that... That extra $950, does he have any recourse?
Well, probably. The first thing he should have done was, you know what? He probably doesn't have recourse, but the casino is at risk. If that casino was in Nevada, they would be at risk of losing their license. And they would be at risk of losing their license because that $950 doesn't belong to the casino. It belongs to the players. It is property, and it is property not owned by the casino by statute. I don't know what this state is. I don't know what their laws are. But in Nevada, if a casino takes the progressive or the progressive growth and doesn't pay it to players but puts it in their own pocket, I believe that depending on the level of it, is even prosecutable against the casino as grand theft. And the agents of the casino that worked, that put that together where that could happen, can go to prison. Okay? So recourse for him, no, that doesn't work, but certainly get it reported to the authorities and get that casino to put that money back there somewhere.
If you're sitting in that situation when that happens, is it a good idea to take out your cell phone and record it?
Certainly. It's also a good idea to sit there and call the gaming commission and say, I'm playing this machine. I want to sit here, get them out there to investigate. There's over $500 at issue. I'm going to play it till it hits, and I need them to put this machine back at $49.50. In Nevada, that would happen. I don't know this state again.
Yeah. And if it's an Indian casino, you got no hope.
Actually, their gaming regulations, many of the tribes write their laws right off in Nevada's. Hmm. So you might have hope.
Yeah, I would have to beg to differ, though. The idea that a casino would lose their license, I mean, they would just say, oh, we're going to add that money to some other progressive. We're putting it back. You know, we didn't take it. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, they're never going to take the license of one of these places.
No, they're not going to take the license, but you'd be surprised at how scared of losing their license casinos are. I had a major that I caught cheating. Caught them cheating. Okay? They paid my client a lot of money. An unbelievable amount of freaking money.
And that client paid you a lot of money.
Yeah, I wish it were more unbelievable. And I'm not saying that happens often, and they didn't think they were cheating when they did. I'm serious. They did not realize they were cheating. The casino didn't.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But they were.
Okay, another player lives in Arizona and set up a sports betting account online in Nevada.
This is the one I can't answer.
So I should probably not even go through the whole question?
No, the one thing I would just stick to, you know, there's so much messenger betting and other issues there that are... If you've got one of the online accounts that require you to bet from within Nevada and it is your account, it should be you and you should be playing it and you should be the one placing the bets and don't try to play games.
And so,
or have your friend set up his own account if he's the one who's coming here and let him bet through the account because it's his account in his name. That was the question. If he gives the phone to the friend and the friend comes and he...
Yeah, you know. It was all... I don't want to say it was convoluted, and I understand what he wanted to do, but you are circumventing something that was put in specific place to avoid what the end result is that you're trying to accomplish. So no matter how you try to do it, it's going to fail the smell test.
Yeah, and I mean, this always used to happen before, right? The guy's friend is coming from Arizona. Hey, when you're in the casino, go to the sports book and make this bet for me, right? I mean, that's been going on for as long as there have been sports books here. Now that it's on a phone, I don't know why that would make any difference, yeah. You know.
I had a relative who went to prison for that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. They called him a bookie.
Yeah. They do those things.
Yeah. Well, he was arrested with 43 other people, and 42 of them got... Okay. He was a two-time loser, so he had to take a plea to stay out of prison for the rest of his life, so he pled. Then the next two went to trial and got not guilty. It's because you're not a bookie. And then they dropped the charges against the remaining 40. So he was the only one out of the 43. He wasn't guilty. He was just as innocent as the others. But he was in a tough spot.
Yes.
I had a friend back in Chicago 40 years ago who the police were knocking at the door. He was a bookie. They were there banging down the door. And he went to the upstairs window and stuck his head out and said, "You'll never take me alive, copper." and then said, I just have always wanted to say that line.
Oh.
And came down and opened the door for them. No, I mean, they were, when they arrested bookies back in Chicago, it was all, they were usually out by noon, you know. And
was there any competition between You'll Never Take Me Alive, Copper, and Top of the World, Ma?
Right. These are old movies, people. You have to watch old movies.
I will bet you over 50% of our audience got both of those references.
Maybe.
I bet that exactly 50% of the co-hosts did. The
White Heat.
Colorado player. There was a few dollars in credits left on a slot machine. Player says he doesn't notice. He went in, put some money in, started to play. The casino discovers this, that he started with money on the machine that wasn't his, and they arrested him. Can this happen? Is playing with money that isn't his, that was theft as far as they were concerned.
Okay. One.
Yes.
The question, can it happen? Obviously, it did. Okay. Two, what a line of crap. I mean, that's the Romanski case, and you guys are familiar with the Romanski case. No, it's not theft. If there is a black chip on the floor and you pick it up, it's not theft. If somebody has abandoned a ticket that has popped out of the thing and it's sitting there, and you take it, it's not theft. If it's credits on a machine that has been abandoned and left to the next person to play the machine, it's not theft. Here is the law. It's universal. It's just this simple. Abandoned property on the premises of another, which is what we're talking about here, is the property of the person who recovers it, not the property of the owner of the premises. There's no ambiguity in that. And these cops, well, that's why in the Romanski case, they paid that lady $600,000 because they couldn't understand a concept as simple as that. The casinos think that they own everything under their roof. They don't. They don't own what's in your wallet when they're in there. They don't own your credits or your chips when you earned them. And if you abandon them, they don't own those either. They own the finder. They're owned by the finder. End of story.
And it can take a law case to find out, but...
You can spend a year and a half in jail fighting it, but you'll be right.
And big attorney fees for being right.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that the person had put money in the machine and was playing it. I thought the person had just gone up to a machine and cashed out, seeing there were credits on there. But how can they claim that the guy, I mean...
That is the Romanski case. Remember, hers was a nickel. She picked up the nickel, put it in, and then stuck in her own 20?
Yeah.
Okay. But even if you don't stick in your own 20, what the hell are you talking about? Why in God's name would that casino or that cop think that the casino has any further right to property that somebody didn't protect than the person who finds it? Again, maybe I go back to the arrogance and all power of these huge businesses that think that they control our lives and our livelihoods in this valley and in other places where they have such power, and they exercise it with extreme prejudice. But you got to call it out whenever you see it.
Good. A man's playing at a tribal casino. The tribal casino tried to back room him. The exit path was blocked, and apparently a suit told him that security would tackle him outside if he left the building without coming with him to sign some paperwork. The player said, "Then I'll sue them for assault," and walked past him anyway, and they didn't follow up on the threat. The question is this a verbal threat of assault and false imprisonment by the casino staff can that successfully be litigated?
Depends on how you define success. You're going to win a buck. It is an assault. Okay? It is a threat of physical force that puts someone in proximate apprehension of such physical force. So, yeah. Jury sits there. You spend a week of their time, a week of your time, casino throwing up excuses, you throwing up how unreasonable this is. And when it's all said and done, the jury comes back and says you walked out, nobody touched you. So, yes, they're guilty of assault, but you weren't damaged. And then when the judge hears you weren't damaged, the judge enters an award for $1, which is called nominal damages. Arguably, in some places, on nominal damages for intentional torts, you can then bootstrap in a claim for punitive damages, and that would be where the money is. If this walked through my door, would I take it? Not likely, especially since it's an Indian casino.
Okay. For the last several years, we've been talking about the Phil Ivey cases in Atlantic City and London. The last time you were on, you said there were preliminary hearings, but everything, all the
preliminary findings,
but all of the rulings so far had been against Ivy and Kelly's son. Has anything changed, made those preliminary findings permanent? Is that totally over, or is it still going on?
I think there's one thing. I think England's over. I'm not positive. I'm not completely up on this, but I think there's still a thread hanging on in
Borgata.
I'm trying to read that. Is that Connecticut or New Jersey?
That's New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay. I really don't understand that stuff, because you have another question in there about asking the dealer where to put the cut card. You know, can you cut it a little thinner? And then he does, or whatever. Ivy's case makes that just as fraudulent or criminal. Apparently, you can't talk to these people and reach your own deal. What the hell is that? I mean,
I've done that before as a player.
I know. Or how many guys walk in with $100,000 and say, I'm going to put this behind your desk there, and I obviously, you know, from the blackjack ball, I know dick about blackjack, but I want to play some high numbers, but I want these rules.
I want this
surrender rule. And the casino says, sure. And then they come back later and they tell you know what? We want all of that money back because...
You tricked us.
Yeah.
Well, and actually, you know, under the same logic of this Phil Ivey ruling in Atlantic City, I don't see why they couldn't go after Don Johnson, right? All Don Johnson did was exactly what you're saying. He showed up with a lot of money and said, I want you to deal me double deck, I want really good rules, and I want a loss rebate. And they said, okay.
I understand. And, you know, I'm not gonna dump on Don or anything, but you can go on, you can see on YouTube how that worked for him.
Yeah.
And how the casino likely didn't understand how it was working for him. Well, tough shit. I mean,
yeah, that's their job, right?
Yeah. But so Richard, you and I'm guessing Bob too, are at a complete loss here. And the other one that I've mentioned here on the show before, I am at a complete loss as to how England or New Jersey can look at a gambling game other than as a competition. And both of them, from what I understand, use a term, what the courts call a term of art, which are ill practices. I think that term only exists because you need something that shows that you're not being criminal, but we don't like what you're doing. Ill practices, what the... I'm sorry, I'm babbling into your microphone here, But I am nonplussed over the idea that that would be a basis for denying somebody what they actually really did win.
Yeah, well, and the other one that drives me insane is, you know, the people at a baccarat table, and the cards are coming out three of diamonds, four of diamonds, five of diamonds, six of diamonds, right? And these small bettors, by the end of the shoe, are betting $5,000 a hand, and now the casino is like, you guys cheated us, right? Because we didn't shuffle the cards.
No, that's not how they came out, though.
They did come out that way.
No, they didn't. They came out, they were pre-shuffled, but in that each deck was pre-shuffled in the same way. So it was the King of Hearts.
Not according to... I went to the G2E cheating conference last year, and George Joseph had video of the cards coming out in order.
Oh, my God.
So, like, for the player and the banker, three of diamonds, four of diamonds, five of diamonds, six
of diamonds.
Are
you guys sure that you're talking about the same incident, though?
We're talking about the cards that were supposed to be pre-shuffled in Atlantic City, where, and these were not professional players.
No, I understand. I know that instance. I understood the facts were as Bob was saying them, but
according to what George Joseph said at last year's G2E.
Because as I recall that case, the pit came in, you know, supervisors came in and watched and couldn't see anything going on. If the situation you understand that you're describing, yeah, they're going to see a five, a six,
no,
a seven, an eight.
I'm going to throw down with you on that one, and I've been over this on this show before. Remember, I had a case with 11 hours of tape on the same team, the same two guys playing at a table. And gaming could not figure out. Gaming and the casino together couldn't figure out the edge at a complete loss. And here's how simple it was. Got your shuffle tracker sitting at spot three. Your BP at spot two. Spot three is flat betting. Since it's shuffle tracking, the big player is all over the place because he's playing off of the signal, and it's not a spread on anything they can figure out. The signal is one hand on the table, two hands on the table, or no hands on the table, three variations of the bet with the
play caller.
Yeah, the play caller. 11 hours. When we got the case, they still hadn't figured it out. They had only gotten on the big player after 7 hours in. But they still didn't know what he was doing. They never did figure it out. They just grabbed him and took him into custody. And that's why the case worked out nicely. But 11 hours of tape? And the Nevada Gaming Control Board and game protection at a major property can't figure out one hand, two hands, no hands. So, yes, I'm certain game protection can watch those cards come out sequentially time after time after time and go, what the hell's going on here?
Because remember, they don't deal them face up one at a time, right? If they were turning them over one at a time, it would be a lot more obvious. So they turn a hand over, and this hand's the 5-7 of clubs, and that hand's the 6-8 of clubs, and, you know, they take a hit.
Well, since I can't get Mr. Nersessian to agree with me, we're going to do some commercials now. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In September, the promotion of the month is the ability to earn up to 3 bottles of South Point Commemorative City Lights Shine Moonshine. It's the only legal distillery in Las Vegas. You may earn up to 3 bottles per week at 800 points per bottle. You keep the points. There are 6 flavors to choose among. Week 4 of the free video poker classes, September 24th, is 9-6, Jacks are better. Multi-strike. It's a 99.79% game. All classes are free, and everybody's welcome. They're held in the Silverado Lounge. We'll be talking more about this game momentarily. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to place lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week, surprise, surprise, is Multi-Strike. Multi-Strike is a game where you pay for four lines up front. That is 20 coins. You play the first line. If you do not score anything, the game is over and you've lost the 20 coins. If you at least get your money back, you get to play the second line at double the amounts for no additional coin in. Win there and you play 4x lines at 4x the payout. Win there and you play the top line for 8x the payout. Periodically, you receive a free ride before the draw, which moves you up to the next higher level, whether you score anything or not on the current level. A separate strategy is required for each line. The Video Poker for Winners software includes this game and the strategies required. On average, playing the multi-strike version of a game adds about 0.25% to the expected value. The version they have at South Point is a quarter, five play, 9-6 jacks or better. So it's 99.79% with a 0.3 club, $25 per five hands that you're playing. It is one of my go-to games on a regular basis, assuming there's not a progressive that I like better. But it is a game I play quite a bit. There are several other games for lesser denominations, but they are all quite a bit lower payouts than the 99.79%. Okay, we're back to Bob Nersessian, seeing if we can find something else to agree with.
Oh, that wasn't the end of the show?
No, that wasn't the end of the show.
That was the commercial break.
That was a commercial break.
I want to know what the separate strategies are. I want to know what the separate strategies are on the different lines.
You want to know what they are or why?
Well, I want to know what they are because this deals with my bank account. See, that's Thea's go-to game.
I can hand you the strategy sheet on the way out the door.
Okay.
But the class is next Tuesday.
Go to class.
And the class covers normally a couple hours to go through all of it. Somehow doing it on the radio is probably not a good idea.
I thought explaining it on the radio seemed lengthy and tedious. Boy, I'm not agreeing with you today, Bob.
I don't know. But since this is the first time anybody's ever used the word nonplussed on our radio show, we're going to forgive you. Now, the Eldorado is mine.
Wasn't that the first time for tedious, too?
Pronounced that way, yes.
Tedious, we say all the time.
I know.
Tejas,
Well, I use the royal tejas.
Eldorado is buying Caesars Entertainment. Assuming this goes through, if you've been previously trespassed from one or more Caesars property, are you still trespassed after there's a change in ownership?
Depends. We've been over this before.
Yeah, we got a lot of we got this question from a lot of people, actually.
Here's the law, okay? And this doesn't mean that the casinos or the courts or the cops understand it or follow it. NRS 207.200 says that if you are told not to return by an owner or occupant of the premises, or an agent of the owner or occupant of the premises, you cannot return. The question is owner or occupant of the premises. And I will use Mandalay Bay as an example. This is just an example because it's right at the tip of my tongue. The owner and occupant of the Mandalay Bay is Mandalay Corp. It is not MGM. It is not MGM Entertainment. It is not anything other than Mandalay Corp. So, if a security guard at the Mirage, which is, I believe, Mirage LLC is the owner and occupant, were to tell you, you are barred from all MGM properties. If he's acting as an agent of MGM, they are neither an owner nor an occupant of Mirage, and he doesn't have authority. What he is certainly not is an agent of Mandalay Corp, and he does not have the authority to tell you you can't go to Mandalay Bay. They do it every time, every day. The police enforce corporate-wide bans. The law doesn't allow for it. And I know people have been convicted for trespassing for violating it. So, you got to look at what is happening in this purchase, okay? Because let's go to Caesar's Palace is owned and occupied by a corporation known as Desert Palace Inc. If you were barred from Caesar's Palace by a security guard employed by Caesar's Palace, which means he was employed by Desert Palace Inc., and after this merger, whatever this new holding company is, be it Eldorado Greek LLC or something like that, or Eldorado Entertainment, and Caesar's Palace is still Desert Palace Inc., it's just the holding company has taken that over, you are still trespassed from Caesar's Palace. If, however, Caesar's Palace is reconfigured or brought in and the top corporation has now consolidated everything and Caesar's Palace, the casino, is now owned by Eldorado Entertainment Group rather than being owned by Desert Palace Inc., you wouldn't be trespassed because you were never warned by an owner or occupant of that casino, which is a casino now known as Eldorado Entertainment, doing business as Caesar's Palace, totally different corporation, that trespass would no longer be good. Now, take that down to the real world, can't help you. You know, again, these are the things that you end up getting prosecuted. You hire me or somebody else for a couple of $1,000 rather than paying the $200 to get it submitted and you taking a trespass misdemeanor that goes away after 6 months, you will be found not guilty for $2,000 versus the $200. So what do you want to do?
If somebody wants to be found not guilty and is willing to pay you $2,000, do you take these cases?
Yeah, I'm 12-0.
That's a pretty good average, isn't it, Richard?
Yeah.
And $24,000 richer.
Okay. Assuming a police officer working on his off hours as a security guard, do my interactions with him at his odd job be the same as if he's on duty?
No.
Okay. What if he tells you he's a policeman?
Yes.
So he's working as a security guard, but he says, I'm off duty, but I'm a Metro.
If he says, I'm off duty, I'm Metro, and I'm a security guard here, no. If he says, I am a Metro police officer, and he actually is, and I'm asking for your ID, that's a different question.
Uh-huh.
Even though he is working as a security officer. Now let's take it one step further. And again, this is the practicalities versus the law. Okay? If you don't show him your ID and all he wants it for is because the casino asked him to get it for them or something along those lines, the answer is still no, you're not obligated to give it to him because you would not be obligated to give it to a police officer in that circumstance either. The police can only demand your, and they can never demand your identification. They can't demand a paper. All they can demand is that you identify yourself. Now, for most of us, that's easy. For Richard Munchkin, perhaps not.
Times they are changing.
And is it illegal to lie to a police officer?
With you, what's a lie?
I love that. But I mean, for you, I mean, is it against the law to lie to a police officer?
Is it against the law?
Where are you going?
Who is in?
I'm headed to my mother's house when I'm really not. Is that against the law?
If you're not.
Okay.
If it is none of your freaking business, that's even stronger.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Right.
Okay. But let me finish on the police officer in the status of a police officer has this authority and no more. If he reasonably suspects, under articulable facts, that you have committed, are in the process of committing, or are about to commit a criminal act, he can demand that you identify yourself, and you have to do so, and a failure to do so is obstruction of justice. Okay? There's a lot in there, though. And the biggie is those articulable facts. If he believes that his casino manager wants to put you in red hand, and that's why they need your ID, there are no articulable facts that give him a reason to believe that you're committing, have committed, or are about to commit a crime. And his demand for ID does not have to be followed. And if he does arrest you or seize you for that, you will have likely a case for his violation of your constitutional rights.
Is that something you're going to get a dollar for?
What do you mean?
Well, he violated your constitutional rights. No. And it's going to cost you $2,000 to hire you so you can get a dollar back.
Nope, nope. Once you have the good case on constitutional rights, there's another state that you bring that under 42 United States Code 1983, and succeeding that statute is another statute, 42 United States Code 1988, that says that if you win, if they did violate your constitutional rights and you're vindicated with a verdict, then whoever did that to you must pay your reasonable attorney's fees. Not may, must. The court shall award a reasonable attorney fee, I believe is the language. Can you believe all these numbers I pull out of my head?
I can't believe that you can say articulable, but you can't say tedious. But with that, we're going to bid Bob Nersessian adieu. We are out of time. We hope we have reason to believe that he very well may be on our show again next week, at which time he can come up with whatever response he wants to the articulable versus tedious. Thank you, Bob. I see your hand up. If that means it's around the corner to your left.
No, no, no. That's a question.
We got about 30 seconds.
That I got from a judge. Is it? And first of all, I used the word chimerical. He said, what? And then somebody else said, isn't that chimerical? And we had this whole argument. I'm wondering what your opinion is.
We'll answer that on the next episode.
You're wondering what the judge's opinion is? Thank you very much, Bob. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit a royal flush, everybody. Good day.